I'm a desperate man. Send lawyers, guns and money. This shit has hit the fan.
Hi folks, Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it, on your own terms, and strengthen your resolve. My goal is to make survival simple, not extreme, no tinfoil hat type thinking, no conspiracy theories, just rooted in common sense. This is episode 91, once again on the road, cashing in on some windshield time. So in this episode, I am going to talk about some myths, some stereotypes of survivalists and who we are. And if I have time, I'm going to get into a little bit about food and water and how that equals freedom. Before I get into all that, let me just take a couple of minutes here, not more than that, just to knock out some announcements. The sack contest, folks, is winding down. May 30th is right around the corner. That's when it's going to end, just a short time left. Don't forget about the giveaways that you can win. The book 98.6 Degrees by Cody Lundeen and the book When All Hell Breaks Loose, also by Cody Lundeen. Those have both been donated by M. Barnello from the forum. Also, we're giving away two books by James Rawls, How to Survive the End of the World as We Know It, Tactics, Techniques, and Technologies for Uncertain Times, and Patriots, A Novel of Survival in the Coming Collapse. Those have been donated by Lord Tennyson. And also, let's not forget about WhatsApp CDs containing tons of portable apps, Puppy Linux, preparedness ebooks, and tons of good stuff. Get on the main page at todayssurvival.com and read about the Sack Club contest, or on the forum. You can read all about it. Let's get going, folks. You can even see the scores and the standings, where it all stands right now. Also, many thanks to the Survival Mom for that great interview in episode number 90. It has become my second most listened to podcast since I launched this show last August. Thanks again, Lisa Bedford. All right, and the last announcement I want to make is if you are not a member of today's Survival Show Forum, become a member. Lots of good, like-minded people. Let's not forget that small minds talk about things, material objects. Average minds talk about other people. But you know what great minds talk about? They talk about ideas and concepts, and that's what you're going to find on our forum, Great Minds. That concludes the announcements. Let's dive into the main topic here. Being bounced around the internet is an excellent post that I want to talk about. And I think it first showed up on the Survival blog. I'm pretty sure the author is a guy named Dan B., but James Rawls put it on the Survival blog, and it's called The Four Great Preparedness Myths. I'm going to talk about this post. I also saw it on the Survivalist boards, and it ended up on our forum, too. I'm not sure. But anyway, it's fantastic. And what I want to do is I'm going to put some of this in my own words. I'm going to paraphrase what the original author wrote. It's a fantastic piece of writing, and I've got some things that I want to add to it. And you'll hear my take on some of the stereotypes and myths about survivalists. So here goes. We are some of the most misunderstood people on the planet, if you want to know the truth. And, you know, I think it's a real shame. It's a real shame because, you know, the media just loves to paint us as these whacked out crazy people. And we're not. And one of the stereotypes that really drives me nuts is a lot of people think that all survivalists are members of some kind of a paramilitary or militia type of an outfit. And this is just not necessarily the truth in most cases. Now, although many survivalists do have a military background, certainly not all of them do, and not all of them come from that type of a background. A recent survey, in fact, clearly showed that the vast majority of survivalists, about 80%, They use a combined approach to survival using military techniques, and those who do not have military training, and you know what they learn through civilian circles and civilian classes. And here's the reality. Only about 6%, this may surprise you, but it's only about 6 to 8% of survivalists are really members of some kind of a paramilitary organization. Okay? The media loves to sensationalize this and paint us as extremists, as I've mentioned many times. But I've got a question I want to ask you. Or anybody listening to this show. Maybe you're listening to this and you're just not quite sure if this survival stuff is for you, but somebody told you about the show and you're checking it out. Here's my question. What is so extreme about wanting to stay alive after a disaster? What's so extreme about that? What's wrong with wanting to stay alive, with wanting to have the best chance that you can to survive a stink hit the fan event? I don't get it. It just puzzles me. I mean, why does somebody buy life insurance? Because they prepare in case something happens to them, their family is taken care of. Why do you put a seatbelt on when you're driving in your car? Do you expect to get into an accident when you're driving? You don't expect to, but you know that it can happen. You know that it can happen suddenly without any notice. And so you've got your seatbelts on because you want to be prepared. There's nothing, you know, those scenarios are the same thing that we do, folks. We just want to have a fighting chance to get through what might hit us. That's all. Another stereotype is that all survivalists have these extensive stashes of weapons and guns and ammo and stuff like that. Now, if you think that's who we really are, think again. You might find it surprising for me to say this, and you know, those of you who have been listening to me long enough, you know I like firearms. In fact, I do a whole nother podcast called The Handgun World Show. And all I do over there is talk about guns, guns, guns. But survivalists are not all guns, guns, guns. It's interesting to note that another survey of people who call themselves survivalists found that they're much more likely to spend money on books as they are on weapons and ammunition. And all you got to do is get on our forum. And there's a whole thread about survival books, and there's a lot of avid readers. Unfortunately, I'm not one of those people spending tons of money on books. I don't know what it is, folks. For some reason, I just can't stand reading. I don't know what it is. I just can't stand reading. I'd rather listen to something or do something. I learn best by doing. But more books, more money spent on books than on weapons and ammunition. And furthermore, that spending is in mostly on books about how to achieve certain skills, like first aid, or cooking, or canning, or dehydrating, and gardening, and so forth. And in fact, most common sense survivalists realize that the basic necessities of food, water, first aid supplies, tools, generators, communications equipment, money, hard assets, real estate, stuff like that are much more likely to be needed than guns and ammo. So that's kind of a stereotype or a myth that I wanted to bust there as well. Another one. Here's another stereotype. All survivalists are conspiracy theorists or doomsayers. Again, not so, folks. In fact, most survivalists perceive the greatest threats are from government or economic collapse or from natural disasters. And given the recent large number of corporate collapses we've had in the last 4 or 5 years, makes sense, doesn't it? And the loss of employment and the natural disasters that have affected various parts of the world, it's understandable how the concern over threats like this is a valid concern. Most common sense survivalists are those who focus on the most likely threats to hit their area. They don't really comment. They don't really focus that much on the far out, uncommon, crazy conspiracy theorists. I know it's a stereotype, but it's just not reality, folks. It's just not. And check out the most popular survival forums, podcasts, internet, books, and things like that. Most of them are not talking about the whacked out stuff. But I got to tell you, there sure are a lot of negatives going on in the world today. Would you agree? All right, another stereotype. Most of the media try to make survivalists seem like they're not very well educated. This is one that really ticks me off. All right? Most studies of survivalists show that about 67% of them have a college degree or better. And about 60% also classify their occupation as professional. In fact, a lot of educated people, they eventually realize that their fancy education didn't really teach them what they need to know to be prepared for ordinary negative events that can happen in their life. It's just not taught in school, folks. It just isn't. And because they are educated, they also possess a real-world education. Once they become a survivalist, they realize how important that real-world education is. And they oftentimes realize how much they don't know. There's an old saying, the more I know, the more I know I need to know. So if you're the kind of person thinking survivalists are not educated people, think again. Okay? Here's another one. Another stereotype drives me nuts. Most survivalists are loners, or in some way they're outside of normal society and they're out there hanging on the fringe. Really? If that's true, there wouldn't be such a booming membership on forums, websites, and podcasts and TV shows and things like that about survival skills. It's taking off, folks. Okay, they're not fringe people. Okay, approximately 48% of survivalists say that they are married with children, ordinary citizens living ordinary everyday lives. And even though I like Cody Lundeen quite a bit, and as a matter of fact, I like him enough that I'm going to choose to play an audio soundbite on this show coming up in a few minutes, he tends to sometimes give people the impression that survivalists are loners out in the woods living off the land. And although that might be some of them, that's not the vast majority of them. The real facts are the opposite. Most survivalists realize the importance of other people's support. I'll say that again. Most survivalists realize the importance of other people's support and family support and the support of like-minded people like those on our forum and many of the others that are out there. Okay? So, you know, that's a stereotype and a myth I wanted to try to bust there. Another one. Survivalists are pessimistic about the future. Yeah, let me blow that one up here. And now, it is somewhat true. Okay, it's somewhat true because there's just so much bad stuff going on out there. But we're not pessimistic, folks. We are realists. We're not denying what's going on. We're not like ostriches sticking our head in the sand and ignoring what's going on out there. That's more dangerous than acknowledging. But we're not pessimists. Okay, what's often mistaken as pessimism is actually an awareness. That's all it is. And some folks are pretty accurate at predicting what is about to come. Okay? And, you know, I mean, in reality, most survivalists believe that an erosion of society is already happening, or it's probably going to occur sometime within the next decade or so, but certainly not pessimistic. There's a big difference between pessimism and realism. Okay, so with that said, I think this is a good time to play this audio soundbite from Cody Lundeen. He was recently interviewed by Don Herold, and you can go to donherold.net and check out his website. And I'll put a link in today's show notes about it, too, and I'll also put a link to where you can hear this entire interview, because I'm just going to play part of it. But, again, you know, I sure love a lot of stuff that Cody Lundeen says, even though sometimes, I mean, if you look at the guy and you're not into survival, you might think, oh, wow, I don't want any part of this. But I'll tell you what, it's just hard to ignore the common sense that Cody makes. So here you go. Here's the audio soundbite. Listen to this, and I got a few comments, and then I'm going to talk some more about stereotypes and myths. Here you go.
Because that's a lifestyle change that then leads to a more self-reliant population, which then leads to a more self-reliant planet. And that's where I'm pushing.
That's exactly what people need to hear in America. And there are a lot of things Americans today face that are challenges that just even 4 or 5 years ago weren't on the horizon. Can you talk a little bit about what you think the challenges Americans face today are and why more Americans need to learn to be prepared?
I think the challenges most Americans face are becoming more self-reliant. According to American Red Cross statistic, 96% of Americans are not prepared for a potential disaster. So if you were a teacher and you had a classroom full of 100 students and only 4.5 or so passed a test, they'd fire the teacher. That's not happening nowadays. So, but the essence of self-reliance is just that. It's not the state or federal government's job to save our butts, so to speak. So I think the biggest push, and I think the wake-up call has come the last 12 to 16 months, is that, wow, maybe the illusion is just that. We better get our ducks in a row and not rely so much on other institutions for our welfare and get back to nitty-gritty common sense and things that are tangible, the tangible economy. You know, for someone that's gold or silver or some extra food or a wood stove they invest in to heat their home if the grid goes down, it's all over the map about what people think is important. But I like that tangible investment that I can hold in my hand that I can look at that isn't in some portfolio somewhere that, you know, in one blip of a computer mouse, it goes away.
Absolutely. And what would you say the three things every American needs to do today to get on the right track?
Well, I have a realization that bad things can happen to good people, you know, that we can be in a compromising scenario here in the United States and get out of the denial factor and actualize a safety plan for their family and then go out and get a few things. You know, find out, here's what I recommend, whether you're in an apartment or a home, take a weekend and duct tape the lights on the walls so that they quote unquote don't work, or turn the breaker up to the house and find out what really hurts for 2 days. What hurts your family physiologically or psychologically, and then get more of that stuff. And I don't want to, you know, put out a hoarding fear mentality. It is really not that. Both of my grandparents were homesteaders in South Dakota. And so I grew up around gardens and root cellars and just doing more with less. And that was an accepted thing of being a good neighbor in rural South Dakota. So I think we should all buck up and become more self-reliant and take personal responsibility for our lives instead of leaning on everyone else. And imagine if every neighborhood did that, there would be no need to go and raid your neighbor, you know, for whatever that term is, because we'd have an semblance of self-reliance for each individual, for each community, for each town, etc. And that's what I think what really needs to happen. Whether it does, I don't know, but I'm working overtime to try to make that happen, because I do love this country. You know, we're all in it together all over the world, and it's kind of sketchy nowadays because we've let ourselves go down this path of we don't know who's flipping the switches. And so I want to bring it back to a more simple state.
I didn't know where you were going with the duct taping of the light switches and all that. That is awesome. And I hope people will rewind or go back and listen to what you just said again on this interview, because that is awesome. Go in there, tape up your lights, turn your breakers off, and try to make it 24 hours, because that's going to tell you where your weak spots are. I think that's an awesome, awesome idea. I know that from reading your books, I get the sense that you're a student of history in some respect. Where are we in terms of history in the cycle of liberty and freedom and security and justice and Constitution and Bill of Rights? I mean, where do you think we are right now as a country, and where do you think we're heading? I know it's not really about survival necessarily, but I'd like to get your take on that.
I think that any country or any peoples that willingly or otherwise let go of freedom are in for a wake-up call, and that can be a little bit of freedom or a big bit of freedom. But I think that if we can come to the essence of really what's going on, it's a taking of power away from the peoples on whatever level you want to take that. And I don't believe that's what this country was founded upon. Again, my pioneer grandparents had to pretty much do a lot of stuff themselves. You know, they were pretty self-reliant. And I see a lack of self-reliance. If we were in the gym, our self-reliance muscles are flabby. We're out of shape, and we damn well want someone to take care of our sorry asses, because we're too damn busy trying to make a living to be self-reliant or prepared for whatever situation might come down the pike. So I think that it's our fault. It's a general apathy on the part of most of our population. We're just too busy or too apathetic to really care. And I think that's a mistake. So I would like to see more people turned on to some semblance of self-reliance, back to simplicity, back to basics. I don't want to roll in the dirt more than anyone else wants to roll in the dirt. But if you don't know where to put your poop when the toilet doesn't work, there's something wrong with that. And that's where a lot of us are at. We literally don't know where to put our poop if the sanitation system breaks down. Imagine that for a so-called enlightened society.
No.
There's a problem with that.
No, Cody, I don't want to imagine that. Actually, I do know where to put my poop. I've read your books. so I know. For someone who's uninitiated, give me three things they can do now to find out about you. Give me a book, give me a website, give me something. Cody Lundeen, where do they find out about you?
Yeah, my website is www.codylundeen.com. That's spelled CodyLundeen. .com. I have a couple books out. My first book is 98.6 Degrees, The Art of Keeping Your Ass Alive. That's based on a modern survival scenario. That's on Amazon and every bookstore. Again, I have a regular publisher. You can order it. My second book on urban preparedness is When All Hell Breaks Loose, Stuff You Need to Survive When Disaster Strikes. And of course, that's number one now on Amazon under survival skills anyway. And that's available on Amazon or pretty much any bookstore out there if you order it.
Right on. Well, I got to tell you something. You are living it. A lot of these gurus come out here and they write the books, and I know they're on TV and all that. You are living it. You're breathing it, and your books are funny. My kids love it. The pictures are great. It's awesome advice, and I really appreciate you coming with me today, and I hope you do it again some other time.
Thanks, Don. Thank you for the opportunity.
You got it, Cody.
Okay, you can always count on Cody Lundeen to say something provocative. Isn't that the truth? You know, I'm also kind of jealous of the people who are going to win the two books sitting on my desk at home. And don't worry, folks, I haven't been, you know, rifling through these books all that much. They're going to be brand new, pristine books when you get them. Anyway, great audio clip. I hope you got something out of that. I sure did. I've listened to it about three times now. All right, let's move on with all these preparedness myths. So this guy who wrote this post on the survival blog, Dan B., entitled The Four Great Preparedness Myths, he makes the point that he said one of the myths is that all preppers are trying to prepare for a particular situation, and their preparations reflect their beliefs about what the situation will be like. Unfortunately, many of those beliefs are false, and those false beliefs seem to be brought about by four myths. Very good point. Now, my myth number seven, which was number one in his article, is that you can defend yourself against a horde of zombies, right? That's a popular one. That's one you see all over the place, defending myself against the horde of zombies. These headless zombies going to come after me with Thompson guns and all that kind of garbage. And there are some people out there that think they're going to be defending their property against a bunch of malicious people like that. And they go ahead and they prepare accordingly. Personally, my thinking is that this is a huge, huge, huge mistake. If you're only planning for one big event, what happens if a smaller, less significant event happens and you've tied up all of your money in your guns and your ammo? And Dan B. makes a point. He says, you know, you need to go talk to somebody who's actually tried to defend themselves against a group of determined attackers and ask them how possible it is, how easy is it to do. And he says, let's do some math. He says, it's pretty simple. The horde has numbers on their side. Duh. Okay? And they have just as much determination as you do. If a large group of people decide that you have something that they want, that's all there is to it. They're going to get it. They're going to outnumber you. You can try to take a stand, but sooner or later, you're going to get run out of manpower and firepower, and you're going to run out of sleep. And then it's all over, folks. Now, me, personally, I don't really prepare for this type of a scenario because, first of all, it's highly, highly unlikely, folks. You know, a Red Dawn kind of a zombie attack, whatever you want to call it, I don't know. You know, you can tell I don't watch a whole lot of that nonsense. It was a great movie, but it was just a movie. You know, that's unlikely to happen. Second of all, as Dan B. writes, it's pretty much a futile attempt, okay? I mean, where I live, folks, the neighborhood I live in, there's not enough armed people that believe in what I believe in, that are trained like me to help me out if an attack like that were to occur. If the unlikely event like that. And third, I'm not going to face a slow-moving, unarmed, clumsy bunch of zombies like you see in the movies. These people are going to be determined. They're going to be smart. And they're just trying to preserve their own lives, too, because, you know, they didn't prepare. They're going to be able to scale fences and create strategies and just simply overwhelm me with sheer numbers. Now, the author Dan B. makes another good point on that post on the Survival blog. That for this reason is why a lot of experienced preppers also live out in the middle of nowhere. Or they conceal that they're preppers. I think this is a huge mistake, too. I think it's a huge mistake. And it also feeds into a lot of the stereotypes and myths about survivalists. Okay, here's a question for you to consider. How long do you think you can live in a community after the stink has hit the fan? How long do you think you can get away with that and conceal the fact that you're not starving while everybody else is? All right, sooner or later, folks, you're going to get discovered. That's why building as many like-minded people and relationships around you is such a good thing. Okay? I mean, and fortunately, what's going on right now is the government and the economy and the economic slump is creating more like-minded people by default. It's forcing people into this mindset, and that's a good thing. There's people out there who have never thought of prepping before that are jumping into the mindset, even if it's just a little bit. But in reality, you're just simply not going to be able to conceal the fact that you have stuff and that you have resources. And, you know, desperate people are going to do desperate things. So I subscribe to the belief that you should eventually set goals to have something you can either give or barter to other people. I'm a huge fan of that. I'm a huge fan of helping other people out when they are in need. Have something that you can give them. Have something that you can give them if they come beating down your door. So that they'll leave you alone, folks. Give them something so that they won't keep coming after you. Or have something that you can barter with them. Obviously, if they're not prepared, they're going to have some needs, and you might be able to do some kind of bartering or trading. Okay? I'm going to let you decide what that is. But I do suggest that you go ahead and decide what it is that you're going to have that you can give away or barter. Now, another myth. And this was second on the author's list, is that stock up on ammo and you'll defend yourself. And just that's all you have to do is just stock up on tons and tons of ammo and you're going to be okay. Well, just like the previous myth, the math just doesn't work. Just doesn't add up because like in that horde of zombies example I just gave you a little while ago, even though you might not be very likely to be in that situation, let's say you were. It isn't going to take long, folks. The whole thing's probably going to be over in a few minutes, maybe an hour at the most. And you know what the problem is you're likely going to be the loser, and guess what's going to happen to all your stored ammo? The winners, the zombies, the people who overrun you and overwhelm you are going to take it. All right? They're going to get it, and that's going to be the end of that. Now, don't get me wrong here. This is not to say that you don't need guns and ammo. As I've mentioned before, guns and ammo is one of your preparations. It should not be your only preparation, but it's one of them. Okay? And as you know, I'm a huge proponent of the right to self-defense. The right to self-defense against humans or against animal attackers. But the idea that you're going to shoot thousands and thousands of rounds of suppressive fire to fight off a regiment of attackers or pick off a few zombies at 600 yards away with your sniper rifle, that's just simply preposterous. Okay? I mean, it's just totally far out. I mean, you're watching too much TV, folks, if you believe that. Okay? And regarding ammo, you know, here's something else I want you to think about, something you might want to consider doing. It's something that I do. I stock small amounts of ammunition for guns I don't even own. The reason I do that is I figure that it might become a decent barter item or something of value that I could sell to somebody who doesn't have enough ammo. And instead of making an enemy, I can make a friend. And maybe even I can even use the proceeds of selling that off to buy stuff I don't have. If I have to buy some more food or if I have to get more water or more supplies that I might be lacking. Okay? And since I'm talking about food, water, and supplies, that brings up the next myth that Dan B. talked about. Myths about survival on the Survival Blog. And that was, the myth says, I only need 2 weeks. Or 2 weeks to 30 days worth of food. That's it. That's all I need. And they confine the amount of food that they need to a small number. Okay? Now, he makes a really good point. He points out a thread that he saw on another survival blog where people were comparing the contents of their bug-out bags. I love this. Listen to this. He says, 7 people in a row described having less than 2 days worth of food in their bug-out bags. Now, I want you to consider something. Okay, what's the use of you stockpiling a bunch of gear and supplies if you're going to be completely debilitated because you're hungry, because you don't have enough food? How are you going to be able to use your gear and maintain the presence of mind to put it to good use? Let me ask you a question. Have you ever been without food for a couple of days? Okay, I have. It's not fun. I don't like being without food for 12 hours. Okay? I know it's possible for a person to survive without food for a long time, for several days, sometimes weeks, but just try it once. Try going without food for even 24 hours, for 2 days. Do that and then email me and tell me how you feel. Okay? Fast for 3 or 4 days. And then just try to engage in some normal physical activity. You won't be able to do it. So this is another reason why I'm such a big advocate of staying fit and in good nutritional health. Because if you do have to go without food, it's a lot easier, folks, if you've been staying fit and you're in decent shape and you're well nourished. Okay? The body can keep itself alive without food, but that's about all it can do is keep itself alive. In a real survival situation, you're not going to be sitting around a desk typing emails. You're going to be running, walking, digging, fighting. You know, plus any other actions that you're going to have to do to help keep your family alive. Okay? And all that requires energy, and it requires a lot of energy. Okay? Now, another good point the writer of this post makes is that is to multiply the number, or multiply the amount of food that you have to store for, let's say, 60 days, multiply that by the number of people in your family or the number of people in your group. And that's how much you got to store. Those are the kinds of goals you need to set for your food storage. Okay? In addition to food, let me ask you another question. What are you going to drink? Okay? How are you going to sanitize water? How are you going to get enough water? Are you storing enough water? How long can you live without water? Far less than you can live without food. Okay? So this whole myth here that he's talking about, in my opinion, it's perhaps a lot more about bad habits than it is a myth or a stereotype. And the bad habits I'm talking about is a lot of preppers focus way too much on weapons and self-defense equipment and communications gear and general stuff when they should be focusing on food, how to cook it, how to store it, how to get water, how to purify it, how to store it, and stuff like that. Keep in mind, folks, you can buy an awful lot of food and wheat and grains for the single price of an AR-15. Okay, and here's the final myth or stereotype that Dan B. wrote on the Survival Blog, and I think it's the best point that he made. And that is, he says, the end of the world as we know it is going to be fun or likened to some type of an enjoyable video game or something. That's true, isn't it? There's a lot of people that think it's going to be fun. You know, all you got to do is get on the internet and read posts. You actually have people that are looking forward to an end of the world as we know it situation. Okay? And there's so many media pinheads out there that also think that survivalists are actually looking forward to a disaster so we can show off our stuff. Not true. Not true. We're not looking forward to it, folks. We're not relishing in the day that's going to happen. Not somebody that has a lick of common sense. All right, but the reason that myth or that stereotype is out there is because too many survivalists say stuff like this. Well, a stink hit the fan event, it's going to have a cleansing effect on society. It'll be like a neat little reset button for society. People's priorities are all of a sudden going to improve because they're going to have to. It'll be a wake-up call. Folks, in my humble opinion, that's crap. Okay? What leads to this kind of a stereotype is that there is an obvious, I hope it will happen attitude among a lot of survivalists that are out there, because for those who have prepared, somehow, you know, things would be better than they were before the shit hit the fan. Nothing could be farther from the truth, folks. Here's a little dose of reality for those of you that might be listening that think that way. If you survive a worldwide collapse, you haven't earned immortality. You've just earned the right to die a death a little later than everybody else. And that was a great point, I think, that he made. And sorry if that sounds harsh, but it's the truth. It's the unvarnished truth. And you know what's really sad about that is you might also have the experience of watching your friends and family go too. So this is not fun. And it's not going to be fun. And unfortunately, there's so many people that now are so many generations removed from primitive medical care that they've pretty much forgotten what life would be like if there was an end of the world as we know it situation. They've forgotten what life is going to be like without professionally staffed, well-equipped medical care and sanitized supplies and stuff like that. Okay? And in our world today, we take for granted our general security. We take for granted the food availability, the existence of reliable utilities, the existence of sanitation, the rule of law we take for granted. Of course, I know a lot of you might be thinking, well, the rule of law, what do you mean, Bob? That's eroding. Yeah, and if you look at what Arizona is getting, the reason why the state of Arizona is getting hammered so bad is they're just trying to enforce the rule of law. I got to be careful, though. I don't want to get worked up on that subject, but that kind of gets my blood boiling a lot. But we take these rights for granted, and we take our access to information granted, folks. But consider something. Little or none of that stuff is going to be available if we have an end of the world as we know it situation. And if you think living in a world where none of these things exist is going to be fun, then you haven't thought very hard. And Dan B. finishes up his excellent post, and he writes, he says, Thomas Hobbes wrote in the 17th century that life was solitary, poor, nasty, brutish, and short. And for most people, that situation doesn't exist, especially in America, folks. And I know we've come a long way since the 17th century when Thomas Hobbes wrote that, but that description probably does fit what the end of the world as we know it is going to be like. And this sad truth is something that people in the prepper world that hope something will happen. The sad truth is that you have people in the prepper world that hope something like that will happen. And they hope for that because then they feel, well, their preps are not wasted. Okay? Here's what I want to say about that. If your preps are wasted, if you prepare and nothing ever happens, that's a good thing. Hooray, that's great. If nothing ever happens, at least you're going to be better off because you prepared. See, just the simple fact that you developed the discipline and the analytical thought and the financial budget and the fortitude that it takes to prepare for likely disasters, just because you did that, it makes you a better person. Okay? It is like the game of chess that I mentioned a couple podcasts ago. So please, don't be one of those people hoping that something bad will happen so you can test out your generator or your cook stoves or your first aid supplies. Because it's not going to be fun, folks. Trust me, it's just not going to be fun. And as Dan B. says, he closes it up, he says, as the old saying goes, be careful what you wish for. You know, hey, thanks, Dan B., whoever you are, for writing that. And thanks, Mr. Rawls, for putting that on the Survival blog, because I haven't seen a post better than that in quite some time. And, you know, I wanted to add some of my own flavor to it and some of the, my thoughts on some of the stereotypes that are going on out there. And I think Cody Lundeen and that audio soundbite I played for you backed up a lot of that. And so with that, I think it's appropriate to go ahead and bring episode 91 to a close, folks. You know, be mindful of what you're doing and also be mindful of how you present yourself to the public. I think it's important that we still go ahead and present ourselves as people who are not extremists. I think if we lead by example, I think our pure example of how we live and the sensible precautions that we take, as long as we keep them sensible, and as long as we don't go off on some tangent talking to people about these far-off theories, you got to understand, when you're talking to people who are not into survivalism, you got to start simple, you got to keep it rooted in common sense, like I try to do with this show, and I think you leading by example and keeping it rooted in common sense, I think that is going to go a lot farther to breaking down the stereotypes and breaking down the myths that we are so wrongly accused of. And so, my friends, as I close this show, keep prepping, keep staying the course, keep doing what you're doing. Understand that you're not part of the fringe element. You're not outside of society. You are part of society. And as Cody Lundeen said, 96% of the people out there don't do this. I'm glad that you have chosen to be one of the top 4%, because I have, and I'm enjoying it. And I'm not going to enjoy the day if it comes. But I'm enjoying my journey on the road to being more prepared. And I hope you do too. So thanks for listening to episode number 91. I'm Bob Main, and this is today's survival show, where it's my goal to help you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. And Teddy Roosevelt said, do what you can with what you have wherever you are. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. This shit has hit the fan. Guns and money.